I'm Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 1975. The album. Here's the thing. If I do, I have to do a Scottish accent to do the title.
That is a little bit true.
Yeah. Well, we'll say that the artist is Billy Connolly. The album, Get Right Into Him. And again, 1975, my guess, Lawrence Brown of Lost in the Pond on YouTube. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I am delighted to have you and your boxes on my podcast. You are, of course, moving. You get to, you know, what's great is you get to make content of, hi, I've just moved. Here's a bunch of boxes. You get to do this on a regular basis.
It's very sort of, yes, easy, you know, on your, you know, doorstep kind of content right there.
Yeah.
Literally on your doorstep.
Yeah.
Your new doorstep. So it's great.
I'm so happy that when I emailed, not only did you agree, but that you picked Billy Connolly rather than anything else, really. Because Billy Connolly's the first stand-up I ever listened to. I was way too young to be hearing it. I want to know when you first heard this album.
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels like it's a strange choice given my sort of normal comedy influences.
Mm-hmm.
But he was one of my first, certainly in vinyl form, he was my first and or only. I can't really think of any others. I would say it was in the region of about 1985 to 1990. I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
I know that much. And my sort of memories of it is that most of it didn't make any sense to my sort of childhood ears. You know, it came from a position of sort of, it was not necessarily adult in the sense of this is way too taboo, but in the sense that he was making observations about sort of British life that I just wasn't attuned to, except when we come to the sort of the second side of the vinyl and a very particular song that I'm sure we're going to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. We will certainly get there. The one that I heard growing up, my parents were, they didn't really care to censor much in the way of, you know, adult material. So it was a greatest hits, which means it was filthy. There's a few things from this album, but definitely more of his filthier adult stuff on it. I was way too young to be hearing that, though. I mean, I would think.
Well, it's a weird thing because my parents, they specifically with Billy Connolly, I always remember them saying, oh, I don't like him. He swears too much. That's an impression of my mom, by the way. Hope she hears this. And so that sort of, I think psychologically at that age, put me off listening to any more of it just in case. But I think the irony with this particular album and that particular scenario is that even though there is a track on it called A Wee Sweary, and the third track I think is called A Four-Letter Word.
Uh-huh.
There's no actual swearing on this album.
I don't think. Nothing. Not that I noticed or at least registered with me. I mean, I'm a bit. I don't always notice it, but yeah, it's pretty tame in terms of language.
It is, and I suppose the closest he comes to even saying anything that would be construed as inappropriate for a nine-year-old is the word Willy, but then I imagine it was probably a nine-year-old British boy who came up with that word. He was probably called Willy, actually. I don't know for sure. But,
I think that maybe the worst he says is, I shit my trousers, and that's about it. That's about it.
Does he?
Yeah, right towards the end.
That's the other thing about the album, is that I only understand about 50% of it because of the thick Glaswegian accent. So he might have said it, he might have said shit in a different way, in a way that I can't comprehend. Because in many ways, being an Englishman, I feel like the Scots are above us. That's geographically true.
Sure.
But I think it's also true in a sort of, I don't know, worldview type way.
Mm-hmm.
They like to have a good time. They like to be loud and boisterous. That's probably stereotyping. But if you've listened to this, you know, album, I mean, that confirms everything I'm saying. So, yeah, and that's the thing about it. And I think maybe it's important for me to just stop and say that to people listening, let's say, you know, Americans who might not be as introduced to Billy Connolly.
Sure.
You know, he's been a big deal in the stand-up circuit in Britain since the 70s.
Before Britain really had stand-up, to be honest.
Indeed, since before we had a sense of humor, that's not true. We're renowned for that historically. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. Although he did actually make some waves in the United States in the late 80s because he was in a sitcom. Head of the Class. Thank you.
He took over for, I want to say, Howard Hessman, who was on a show called WKRP in Cincinnati. I think he was the first teacher on that show. Then he left, and then we had Billy Connolly, and I was delighted.
Yeah, so I hope that that helps to connect some dots for American listeners / viewers on Patreon. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's often hard. You know, I run a YouTube channel about sort of British and American cultural differences, and it's hard to sort of gauge his popularity over here sometimes. Mm-hmm. But certainly that's it. I do often wonder if it's because of the sort of hard to translate Scottish terminology and things like that, but also some of the cultural touch points that he makes about Britain that don't necessarily relate to American life. But it was interesting listening back to it today, because I can't understand for the life of me why I shouldn't have. It was almost perfect for a 9-year-old kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
This album. And I don't mean that in a kind of disparaging way, in that it was all lowbrow. It's quite inventive in many ways, quite intelligent humor.
Yeah.
But done through the guise of sometimes, you know, kind of potty humor and things like that. But it's observational in nature.
Yeah. I love, and I think we've only talked about Billy Connolly on here a few times, but he has an impossible to sort of define act. Because every time I hear bits and pieces, I'm like, oh, he can play banjo like a motherfucker. That's a little Steve Martin-ish. The way he talks about and plays with language is a little George Carlin. There's also the fact that he just straight up does what I think are street jokes, because I've heard other people tell these jokes since, and I'm like, did they steal it from him, or is this a variation that's been going around? And I'd never seen anybody mix observation, street jokes, music, and a genuine breaking down of the language in the way that Billy Connolly does. I've never seen it before.
I'd agree with that. And I think that the comparisons to Carlin are good ones, sound ones. As somebody who, again, deals with sort of British versus American cultural differences, I'm going to remember that. Mm-hmm. So thank you for pointing that out. But from a personal point of view, he's not somebody that I, you know, sat down and listened to or watched on a very regular basis. Mm-hmm. Again, I think it really does go back to being told that I shouldn't do that, even though my parents were somehow fine with me watching Friday the 13th movies at 9. So I don't know. It's just weird, isn't it, in that regard. But and so I wouldn't sit here and say that Billy Connolly was necessarily one of my comedic influences. Mm-hmm. He might have influenced, or in fact, his sort of my parents' reaction to him might have influenced my choice not to swear on my YouTube channel.
Okay.
But I do swear elsewhere, right? I could come on your show and say fuck, and it's fine, presumably, because you've already said it.
So I have, and it's delightful. So
it is. It feels so nice.
Yeah.
But I made a conscious decision not to do it on my channel, and I think that's because I knew my mum was watching, and that's ridiculous after all these years. Mm-hmm. So if I connect those dots back, then yes, I could say that he did influence me in that way, which is weird because Billy Connolly is, I can't think of a stand-up who swears more normally. but he just chose not to in this one. Don't know if that was a conscious decision or not.
That's very funny. I think you might have mentioned in our emails, is this an album you had to sneak to listen to, though? And where did you get it? Was it already in the house, and why?
I think, now that the second part there is a great question, because I'm thinking it was my parents that owned the vinyl player. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking they also owned that album. So now I'm trying to think, well, that's a little bit hypocritical, you know.
Right.
But then again, it's the same parents who said, don't smoke. And, you know, they did for the first 20 years of their life. Not the first 20 years. That would be insane. probably after they got to 16 and then they started doing it. And so there's, I think it, not to diverge away, that's the wrong word, not to veer away from this topic, but, you know, parenting must be weird like that. Mm-hmm. Giving kids advice of what not to do, probably because you yourself have done it, and then that you start to find that out. And I think that, I actually, now that we're talking about this, I like this because, you know, the sort of don't listen to Billy Connolly, that whole mentality shifted, of course, when I got away from my parents. By the way, if my parents ever hear this, I'm talking about, this sounds like I'm talking about them in a bad light. They're the best parents in the world. Mm-hmm. Disclaimer, I hope they heard that part. And I got away from that influence and started listening to just sort of comedy that I wanted to listen to or watch, you know, and regardless of content and its central sort of focus and things like that. I don't know. It's a really weird thing that I picked Billy Connolly for this whole thing, but it's the only sort of vinyl, example that I have. I don't really know where I'm going with this. So as the host, interrupt me whenever.
Here's the problem is I'm normally the one saying, I forgot I had a question. I don't remember what the fuck it was. And then I usually leave my fumfering in like an asshole. It's okay. You know, I chose you because, not reticently because of you, but reticently because you're a YouTuber. And I'm fine with YouTubers. Listen, I'm just about to just be fake disparaging against YouTube. I really like your channel is what I'm saying. And I find you very funny. And you've got, you're here. You've been in America for what, a dozen years? Is that right?
Ish. It's at least 100. Yeah.
At least 100. Okay. Fair enough. And your channel somehow manages to make the differences between England and America, Britain and America, interesting. And I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, I don't either. Mm-hmm. It is all luck. Mm-hmm. And I think it just comes down to the fact that I have dimples. I think people just, they warm to that, mm-hmm. although they can't when I have a coronavirus beard.
Sure.
So they can't see through it. But ordinarily, you know, it is there. And I think that helps because people think I can trust a person with dimples.
Mm-hmm. The accent is part of it, though. Let's be honest. I've talked a lot about American obsession with Python, and I think a lot of it comes down to the accent. I really do. Not to disparage their work, but I do think that's why we're more obsessed with Python than a lot of English people are.
You could be right. I get mine from my Aunt Mildred, not my parents, because they speak with a thick Grimsby accent, you know, whereas that probably is meaningless to you, unless you're familiar with the Elton John song, Grimsby.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Just throwing it out there.
That's good. You know? No, I'm going to now have to give it a listen. The reason I bring up the English accent being having a certain effect on people is Billy Connolly uses it for effect so much throughout this record, usually when he wants to make fun of somebody who's super posh sounding or very proper.
Right.
Or the English.
He does the English, you know. I almost felt attacked during it, but then I realized, no, I'm on your side, Billy, so it's fine. But yes, the bit where he's doing the sort of the Cockney accent and all of that. Yes, I agree. He's very good at that, by the way. Yeah. I almost couldn't tell it was him when he was doing it, other than the fact that I knew it was his stand-up. So of course it was.
He's such a good, I mean, I could also go into what a brilliant voice actor he is and what a brilliant actor he is. Just personal recommendation for anybody. If you haven't seen the movie Mrs. Brown, go watch that movie immediately. It's depressing, but it's very, very good. It's him and Judi Dench. It's phenomenal.
That's amazing because my mom is called Mrs. Brown and my aunt is Judi Dench.
Fair enough.
I tell people that. I
mean, sure, of course. Why wouldn't you? Why would you not? She's Judi Dench.
She is. A dame, no less. You know, has Billy Connolly been knighted? Have we looked that up?
Should be at this point. I'm going to guess now, but...
Yeah, should have been in 1985 or ages ago by now, I think. So if he hasn't, then that's sad.
Is he too dirty for the Queen?
That's a good question. I think he got an OBE or a CBE. I seem to remember the Queen getting the sword, you know, because that's what they do. Actually, if she was swording him... Mm-hmm. I've never used that verb before, but if she was, then that suggests to me that he was knighted, But I'm saying that from the point of view of ignorance, and now I feel very vulnerable right now because I go into.
He is. When the hell was he knighted?
He How was knighted. Okay.
Now I feel like an asshole, Sir Billy Connolly. My apologies,
Sir William. Of
Sir
Connolly.
William Connolly, CBE, is
yes.
the full of the realm, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What's the longest English? Some of the titles are impossibly, beautifully, ridiculously long that you can
yes.
get.
I did hear there's Lord Lawrence Barrington Keane Brown of Grimsby.
Mm-hmm.
That's me, and mm-hmm. I made that title up just
That's
now.
That's fine.
And then there's I don't know. There are some really big ones, and you know that they went to boarding school. other than that, I don't know much about them. I joke that I have connections to the royals, not because I think Americans will be fooled by it.
Sure.
It's more to play up to that stereotype of Americans. I know that most Americans don't think that way.
Sure.
Therefore, I'm going to sort of laugh at the idea that it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And usually I get laughter for it. Not always, though.
Listen, if you've got somebody who's also looking at notes and trying to, find you charming, I'm trying to do both at the same time. I do find you very funny, and I apologize for not laughing soon enough.
Thank you. Also get that from my Aunt Mildred. She's made up. I made her up. Sorry.
She's good. It's a good character. Mildred is a good name. Mildred's
yes.
a very funny name. It's an inherently funny comedy name. Now, what's throwing you most? Obviously, the language, the accent and dialect barrier is going to be different for me, but have you ever seen the movie The 13th Warrior? This is a side note that I promise will apply.
I have not seen it, no.
I don't think it's good. I loved it. It's a pre-Lord of the Rings, very Viking-y movie wherein Antonio Banderas plays, I believe, an Arab man. It's a little weird and sensitive casting. But at some point, he joins this group of Nordic gentlemen, a bunch of Vikings. None of them can speak, but by the end of the night, he's listened enough and he can understand the language, and all of a sudden they can speak to one another. I listened to Billy Connolly so much as a kid, laughed when I knew I was supposed to be laughing, and eventually, I think that's what gave me the ear for Billy Connolly. But still, again, maybe about half of this record, I generally know what he was saying. But boy, oh boy, he doesn't care to adapt to anybody else's standard.
Yeah, and I think that's something that I respect about him in many
yeah.
ways. And I have a similar experience, because I think that when you're a kid, a laughter track or a live audience is a good signal to let you know when to laugh, I think. And also, it makes you feel a bit stupid because you don't realize why mm-hmm. they're laughing. But yeah, I don't know. I think that I think I found something else intriguing in it that wasn't necessarily funny, right? I think you don't always have to laugh at comedy.
Sure.
It can sometimes just be, wow, that's just, I'm just listening and I'm transfixed by it.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm not kidding. That was sort of my experience when I listened to the record again today after
yeah.
however many years. What is it now? 140 mm-hmm. years since I last did. My timelines are screwed up here. I'm definitely not over 100, in case you're thinking that back home. I didn't necessarily laugh out loud, but then I wasn't in a room with lots of people as well.
Right.
I think that you know, plays into it. But I was just transfixed at the style. At first, when the first track played, the first sort of 3 minutes, I just thought, where's this going? I either feel so removed from 1975, or I just feel removed from what's happening here. And it's kind of like a Radiohead album. It's mm-hmm. a grower. And you yeah. kind of have to really sit there. And then you realize, oh, right, this is actually a work of sort of Scottish genius at work.
Mm-hmm.
Second only to Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the internet. actually, you might switch them. I mm-hmm. am going to switch them, because if I don't, I might not be welcome back in Glasgow ever again.
Fair enough. And also, is Tim Berners-Lee, has he been knighted? Because I don't think that should, I don't know. I could be wrong.
That's something we should look up on the internet he created.
I know. I mean, let's be honest. He technically invented the World Wide Web, but we can pick. He has been knighted.
He has. There we go.
Sir Timothy John Berners-Lee, OMKBEFRS, FRE, lowercase ng, FRS, AFBCS. That is a title.
I think we found our man.
I think we have.
That's amazing. This is great. We should turn this episode into who's been knighted and who hasn't. Or not. We could just talk about the album.
The album, I mean, is probably preferable, but if you've got anybody else comes up, let me know. I'm happy to, you know. Is a dame the same thing as a knight? I can never remember.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of it, yeah.
My mother's an amateur like English historian. She loves this shit, and she'd be so disappointed to know that I can't remember that or remember the name of every one of Henry's wives.
And being born in England, of course, I mentioned a moment ago I won't be allowed back in Glasgow.
Sure.
Same is true of London, though, if I don't know every knight of the realm.
But so, that's why I have every one of XTC's albums memorized, or I won't be allowed back in Swindon, where I was born. So then I'd be in trouble.
Wait, you know? Swindon, England?
Yes, sir.
I didn't know that. Then again, I didn't even know of your existence until 2 weeks ago.
Exactly. So. That's one of those things that really, it's a grower. my parents are both American, though. So that is it's a long story.
Sure.
Not that long a story. They're both American and they met in Britain.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you got through the whole story there in 15 seconds. I was counting. It was
much quicker than I anticipated. I'm not a Billy Connolly who can stretch out a story and keep you going the entire time. That's called a segue.
Yeah, it is called a segue. We've gotten back to it. And he is good at that. But I think that's what about him made me think at first, is this for me? It feels like it's, where is it going? And part of me wants the instantaneous, instant gratification, the instant laugh. He kind of makes you work for it.
Yeah.
That first, it's not the first track, but it's the bit where it's a four-letter word, I think, is the track. And it's talking about the guy at the BBC. And I don't know, it's just sort of, it's very funny. And I think, have we even mentioned as well, because that takes song form, have we even mentioned about this album that he intersperses, you know, a lot of the sort of brilliant Glaswegian, almost angry, but observational comedy with kind of country folk songs as well?
Yeah, that didn't. I briefly mentioned the banjo, but did not mention that this is at least half music. This is because he started out with a band called, oh my God, what are they called? The Humble something or others. I'll have
Humble
to look
Bugs,
them up.
Isn't it? I think I'm making that up now.
That sounds like it, but again, since you're making it up, I'm going to go ahead and say you're wrong. Humble Bums, there we are.
That's the one.
So close, you were a letter off. He did begin, like, his first record was released in 1969, and he's got this beautiful, charming singing voice. Where maybe he's not putting the full effort behind it, I don't know. But he's also, it's also the songs are also when you can understand him the clearest. That is also another part of it.
I agree. And yeah, he's sort of got the Bob Dylan thing going on where you don't care about the singing voice as much as you do the song itself.
Yeah.
But it's a nice way of splitting it up because you're completely right that it's the easiest to understand him, not least of which because he at one point sings A Coat of Many Colors, which of course is familiar to probably a lot of Americans who know Dolly Parton.
Right.
You don't have to actually know Dolly Parton. You just need to know her music.
You don't have to have met the woman, sure.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's good in a way. It's like, it's... This is going to be a weird sentence, given what we're talking about. But it's like when you intersperse a kind of dramatic film with comedic relief, comedy relief, comic relief, that's the word.
Mm-hmm.
That's the phrase. It's that you kind of need it, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, that doesn't quite apply here because it's all comedic. But it takes you out of that kind of the sort of storytelling aspect where you're trying to figure out what's going on. And it's just a nice... digestible song. Here you go, 3 minutes, listen to this, and I dare you during every single song not to sit there with a very big smile on your face.
Yeah.
For me, I wasn't necessarily laughing out loud at the songs. I was just sitting there like an idiot going, this is so nice. It's the most beautiful thing. And I think that's good. It's sort of it's a nice sort of way to let you as the audience member just sort of unwind for a bit, and then we're going to get back into the very observational stuff, which when I say it like that, I don't want to disparage the observational stuff too.
Sure, no, it's very good.
It is very good. It's an important part of it. Just know you might need a translator.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's going to happen. I was trying to look up when he actually first performed the Welly song, because that's one thing at the beginning of this is the one I grew up with, I think, was the original performance, but that's also a best of album. This is clearly at a point where his audience is more than familiar and he's screaming at them to sing. And boy, oh boy, I was in the room with somebody else and we were both laughing out loud. But again, that is part of it. That just kind of killed me. Him just screaming at the audience.
Yeah, me too. And I recalled this crystal clear after I listened to it earlier on, that was something that I gravitated toward as a kid. It was that audience interaction. It was pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. But the thing about that song, and I think the reason that I, you know, remember it so vividly from being a child, is that a child in Britain can understand the sentiments within the song.
Sure. For
anybody who's not familiar with the term wellies, mm-hmm. wellies are, they're a type of footwear, I think, similar to what Americans call galoshes, I believe.
Yes.
And they're, you know, they're normally worn by children in Britain, sometimes soldiers from the past, mm-hmm. and Billy Connolly. And it's, I don't know, it's a funny song because you can relate to it. Mm-hmm. As a British kid growing up in this kind of like a soggy environment, mm-hmm. and your parents, coming back to parents again, right, telling you, oh, if you don't wear your wellies, you'll catch, they would never say pleurisy as he does in the song, but they'll say, you know, you might catch influenza or something mm-hmm. like that, to scare you into wearing them. As it happens, I kind of used to like wearing my welly boots, my wellies, mm-hmm. and I used to dress up as Superman in them.
Fantastic.
It is, because I had a nice red pair.
Oh, that's so good.
It is, but the problem was they were really heavy, so you couldn't fly very easily. Just realized I am a mortal and I can't fly anyway. But, you know, it's, but they're good. And so that's really what the song is about. I don't know, though, that it's a song he himself wrote. I think it's a...
No, I just found that out the other day. I'm glad you brought that up. I had forgotten that. I'm going to have to look up who wrote it. Willie's song. Rarely is there this much typing in this podcast, but, you know, I don't want to upset anybody. Where the fuck did it go? But yes, here, I'm just going to stall. Welly is short for Wellington. Does that help anybody with anything?
It might, because it's a segue into Wellington being, I believe the Duke of Wellington is where the boots came from, because he was known for wearing them and using them to kick people. I might have made that last part up. Probably did.
You're fully aware that the dryness really, really does help sell any fake fact. And that's... Yeah. That is one of the things you're born with. I'm jealous. I'm quite jealous of it.
Well, the irony being that I'm employing dry humor to talk about wellies.
That's very true.
It's a very, very British thing to do, I think.
They're a sweaty device. I think my first pair were a pair that I could share with my Paddington that was a very tall Paddington. I had a very English upbringing for about a year and a half.
Well, I mean, Paddington was named not far from Swindon in Paddington Station, London. It's just south.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Wow. Geography is coming out. It's coming to the fore in this conversation.
I cannot find out who the hell wrote it. I saw it the other day just completely by chance. But no, you're right. He did not write it.
But it's fine because, mm-hmm. you know, the song itself, it's so catchy.
It's so fucking catchy.
It makes you want to wear a pair of wellies.
Kind of does, yeah.
In your new flat where everything is just being unpacked, including my wellies, they're in that box over there.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't get to them. You can't see this if you're listening to the podcast, but I'm pointing at boxes.
These are the bonuses you get, by the way. If you subscribe on Patreon right now, you'll get to see Lauren's point at a box.
It doesn't get more entertaining than that.
The original version of the Welly song, he does introduce it by saying, I'd like to talk to you all about Scottish Highland national dress, Wellington boots. And it's very funny. He gets a good laugh. And then he just goes into the song.
It's good context.
It is. It really is. I'm sorry. I'm just looking at my very terrible notes. I also liked it. I don't normally like comics who laugh at their own shit, but he really is getting a kick out of The Next Thought. And I love
it. I wasn't about to say that, but I had it in my notes that I didn't actually make to say the same thing. When I was listening to it earlier on, I don't really like it when comics laugh, mostly because I can't do it myself. I don't know how to laugh at my own jokes or anybody's jokes. I laughed there actually, so I've really,
that's good.
I underselled my point.
We're making progress.
We are. But I don't know why I'm whispering. I think it's because you just did.
Because I just did it.
And then you went into a Russell Crowe voice from Gladiator. Yeah. What are we doing? Okay, so back to the matter at hand. There's something very infectious though about the way he does it, because it's not just a little giggle. It's a full on, like, I'm in hysterics. Yeah. I'm laughing because the audience is laughing and I'm enjoying this moment. And I think that's what I love about him. And it's something I've come to like about him as a human being too. I've watched interviews with him over the years, and he just seems like a very gracious and nice, down to earth, genteel human being, which you don't necessarily get that in between all of the yelling that happened. But that's fine. I think that's sometimes the mark of a good comedian. They can elevate themselves to a level that is beyond their normal persona, or they can bring it down in real life. It's one or the other, you know. Unless you're Robin Williams. He seemed to be just like it all the time. Yeah. It was insane. I don't know how he did it.
I have so many friends with Robin Williams stories, and like I think I'm glad I don't have one, only because I think it might have slightly ruined my impression of him. I'll live with him as, you know, the guy in Good Morning Vietnam. Nobody gives that example, but I think that's his best work.
I love that film. Yeah.
It's phenomenal. Yeah. It's somebody who actually used his skill to better the film. That rarely ever happened. Mrs. Doubtfire was literally just, I think it was an acting reel that got turned into a movie, is what it felt like.
Yes.
People our age are expected to love that. Is that a movie you saw as a kid? Maybe not. I don't know what you got.
No.
Is it? Okay. All right.
It is. Oh, yeah, yeah. We got that film. I didn't see it at the cinema. I was, you know, I was 12 years old. No, wait. I'm supposed to say I was 112 years old.
112, yeah.
112. And so I didn't have the mental capacity yet to understand that it was at least a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. But when I was that age, it seemed like it was really good. I was like, well, he does pull off both the Scottish accent and the sort of like genteel, there's that word again, old lady, you know. So credit where it's due. I haven't seen it since though. I'm worried about doing it because I know Pierce Brosnan pre-Bond is in it.
I
don't want to be, you know, I don't want that moment in my life to be spoiled by his role in that.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, don't let that ruin you.
Billy Connolly.
Billy Connolly, thank you so fucking much. Okay, so actually, I'd like to know, again, only knowing him mostly from a cassette, from my parents talking about him, and from any exposure we had over here, which was minimal. He still had a huge impact, but I want to know where you think he stands in the pantheon of British comedy, and I'd like to know what he was in that I probably missed.
Definitely, yeah. It's sort of hard because, like I said, he never was among my influences necessarily. But I do, you always hear of him talked in very high regard, of a very high regard. It's singular, you know. And so I've always just been aware of that. And you can usually tell the measure of a man by the size of his Wikipedia page. And I went on there earlier on, it's huge.
Yeah.
Still talking about his Wikipedia page. Mm-hmm. Although, making an allusion thus, he does exactly the same on this album about Willys.
He absolutely does.
On more than one occasion. So he's obsessed, but then we all are in Britain. It's a nice segue, you know. It's usually a short segue in my case, but we won't touch on that. Please interrupt me anytime.
I'm waiting. I really like, it's one of those things I like when the guest brings their own shovel to the show.
Yeah. And I don't have anywhere to dig. There's nowhere else to. I'm trapped in between not just boxes, but there's a whole drawer of underwear there, and I can't tell you whether it's been through the laundry or not.
Ooh, that's fun.
So yeah, literally airing my dirty laundry on a podcast. I can't believe it. So I think he's very highly regarded. You'd be hard pushed in Britain to find somebody that goes, I fucking hate Billy Connolly. You know, and that was in a broad northern accent in England. So I think if anyone's likely to, it's somebody from south of the border. Mm-hmm. But no, I think he's just very well respected, despite the time in history when he briefly dyed a little part of his beard purple. It was weird, but look it up.
That's amazing. I mean, that's one of the many things that I love about him. He is very free spirit. I'd have to look this up, but he had a kind of a similar trajectory, I noticed, in terms of comedy specials to what Carlin had, where he got a little darker and angrier a little bit later in his career, if I remember correctly. People are going to correct me on this if I'm wrong, but I do remember him having a weird similar, but it's because he was a hippie getting older and observing what assholes all the other hippies were becoming, and it is kind of fun to compare what Carlin did to what Billy Connolly did in terms of, again, Carlin never did music, not actual music, but they were similar.
Yeah, well, Carlin made up for it, though, in the Bill and Ted films. You know, so there is that. And then, of course, the thing that immediately, that's the word, isn't it? That's an adverb I learned today. Mm-hmm. And the thing that immediately springs to mind there is that when I was listening to the album today, before you'd said that he's comparable to George Carlin, I thought to myself, he's comparable to somebody in stand-up who did, you know, the seven words you can't say on TV. Who did that? I can't remember who did that. Anyway, because he did the bit about, you know, a four-letter word.
Yeah.
And so that means he is basically George Carlin, but for Scotland. And there are other reasons too.
For sure. You know, actually, to your point, in the four-letter word, I think he intentionally swallows the word fuck. I think he says, yeah, and he said, like, he does that a lot. Now that in my head, I'm like, doesn't he swear more? But no, I think he swallows the words a lot just as a gag.
I've just realized as well, though, he does swear on this album, doesn't he?
Probably.
I made the mistake of, I listened to it on YouTube, right? Because I just didn't want to pay for it just in case I hated it, right? Which I didn't. But sure. I made the mistake of reading the YouTube comments underneath it, where they all sort of said, it's ironic, isn't it, that he doesn't swear on this album? And then I repeated that verbatim, however you want to pronounce that word. Mm-hmm. And now I feel stupid because I've just remembered a bit in it where he's talking about the drunken lout that gets on the bus and sits next to the other drunken guy. And they're going, fucking.
It's in character at the very least.
It is in character, and it could almost just be a Scottish word with which I'm not familiar. I don't know.
So there are a lot of those on here.
There are. I'm almost willing to give him a free pass on that one.
It took me forever before Wikipedia that I could learn what Bovril was. So in the other album, that is quite heavily used, and I had no idea what Bovril was for years.
Absolutely. I mean, you can mark the measure of a good sort of drinking powder by the size of its Wikipedia page. But if you don't have one, what are you going to do?
Actually, look really quick. Bovril CBE. Look at that. That's also amazing. I had no idea.
Hasn't been knighted yet, though, has it?
No. But still.
I think if the Queen brought the sword down on that, there'd be a huge mess.
It would go everywhere.
It would. The cleaning staff would, you know, they're the best in the world, so they'd do it quickly before
the corgis.
But are they faster than the corgis? You know, they'd run in and lick it.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Exactly.
But Bovril is a credit to the realm. Let's never forget that.
It is. So the album, it's worth me mentioning, I think, from a personal point of view, that I always remember Wellies being the first song on the album. And it's because I think I started it on side B, because that's where it is.
That's fantastic.
Clearly demonstrates my lack of understanding of vinyl players at the age of 9.
Uh-huh.
But I don't, you know, I'm not entirely certain to this day, because, you know, there's such a thing as Mandela effect, right? I'm not entirely sure if I've ever heard the entire album until today, and I'm coming on your show to sing its praises, or at least critique an album I might not have heard before.
You know, though, here's the thing. People come on thinking they're going to praise an album and then leave realizing they hate it. That has happened. Or they like they introduce it and then they're like, before we start, hey, dude, look, I listened to it. I know it was shit. Do you still? I'm like, yes, let's talk about how shitty it is. Listen, so much of my memories of comedy growing up are exactly what you're talking about, though, where you think, yeah, that was my favorite thing of all time. And then you revisit it and you're like, you know, how many problematic 80s and 90s movies like that stuff gets shoved away because you have no context as a child to, you know,
yeah.
How creepy Revenge of the Nerds is or some other, the English equivalent of that. I'm sure there was an English Revenge of the Nerds. Oh my God, if there was an English Revenge of the Nerds.
There
I'm
must sure have been. It would have been, right? Been sort of like the Revenge of the Dweebs or something, yeah. Like that. We'd have remarketed it, or just, is that the word? I don't know. But yeah, and the, you know, you have inspired me to go and watch Mrs. Doubtfire after this.
That's what I did. Oh God. Okay. Yeah. Well,
that's your legacy.
That is some more than faint praise, less than faint. It's definitely bordering on faint praise. Boy, that is, again, Mrs. Brown. I'll just recommend again, Mrs. Brown. Please, everyone, go watch Mrs. Brown. Not a funny movie at all. It's a sad romance. Very sad romance, but good.
You asked me earlier if I could recommend any other Billy Connolly films.
Yes, if there's something I might have missed.
And I'm not sure I can. There's there's one where he plays God.
Really?
But I don't remember the name of it, and you're the only one with Wikipedia at your fingertips. I don't want to put you in the position of having to research on air again.
Billy Connolly.
If you're up for it, God. And I'll just keep talking while you type.
Sure, that's fine. There's an album. There's a movie called The Man Who Sued God. It's an Australian comedy film starring Billy Connolly and Judy Davis.
Is he the lead in it?
It looks like he is, yeah.
That's got to be it then. Yeah, yeah, that'll be it. Yeah.
The Man Who Sued God.
Yeah. I remember was it like from 1998, something like that?
2001, very close.
Yeah, that's about the same. Yeah, when you've lived 110 years, 3 years is worse.
Are you a Time Lord? Is this what we're discovering?
I am a bit of a Time Lord, okay. In a way, yeah. Okay. Because, well, my house is currently smaller on the inside, actually, just because of boxes and that.
That's a reverse. That's weird. Okay.
It is. Yeah. I'm like an inverted Time Lord. That's, I don't know what that is. I think Santa Claus is a Time Lord, by the way, while we're on the subject.
Sure. I think he is too. I think it was a mistake to include him in that episode, even though Nick Frost was great playing Santa Claus. It was.
Because think about how quickly he gets around the world and he can fit all those presents in a sleigh. Must be bigger on the inside. Liar. Such a liar. Billy Connolly. He looks a bit like Santa nowadays. You know, he's a skinny Santa, I should say.
Scottish Santa.
Yes. Yeah. Well, because think about it. Scotland is closer to the North Pole than a lot of places.
Uh-huh.
And he's got rosy cheeks and a rosy nose.
Uh-huh.
That's about it. I mean, it does sort of stop there. He has a beard. And
you know,
white.
Something occurring to me is while every time he does a sort of fey voice on the album, it is definitely, again, an Englishman. Look away, Martha. There's just this early bit about fighting that I can't remember. I can't remember the context. I've already forgotten it. It's just the voices that stood out. He also does lean into what assholes he considers a lot of Glaswegians to be. just willing to fight, ready to fight. Also, there is, it's also still like a proud, I'm proud of it, but I hate it kind of thing that you can sense in his voice.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of the sort of the football fan about him in a way, as in, you know, soccer, in the, you sort of, if I go to a football game, I'm the most sort of, I'm going to use the word for the third time, I'm the most genteel man in this closet. Right, I'm the only person in this closet, actually. But I am I'm a sort of by nature quite a calm individual. But if you put me at a football match, I'm getting right into it, right? And and you sort of join in with that whole thing, and you sort of appreciate it at that moment. But if you go home and watch on the nightly news that, you know, a few yobs got a bit angry and hurled abuse at the referee, you think, grow up, you know?
Yeah.
And so it is. I think he's got a bit of that about him, maybe. But I don't know. It's a hard thing because, like, growing up in England, I've only visited Scotland once. It was weirdly enough, to perform in the Edinburgh Fringe, something I discovered the day that he did.
That's phenomenal.
I haven't been knighted yet.
Not yet.
So there's that. But
first YouTuber to be knighted.
Could be. And the last. Yeah, but I have had my letter from the Queen for reaching 100.
So that's delightful.
That's nice. It smells so terrific.
Did it come with anything? Did she send you like a packet of Twiglets or something just to like, here, good for you? No.
She's a bit of a cheapskate.
That's obviously fair.
Yeah. I might be barred from entering the country again for saying what I just said.
Sure.
So I can't walk it back now.
Well.
So where was I? I
don't know. That's a very good question. I'm supposed to be keeping track of these things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Billy Connolly I think, again, just going back to the sort of the cultural impact that he has in Britain, that's what I was going to say. As an Englishman who's only been to Scotland once,
oh yeah, right.
It's hard for me to get into that kind of cultural way of being when it comes to Scots. They are a very proud people, very proud people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he sort of embodies that. Mm-hmm. But he does. But he obviously, as a comedian, does it in a way that isn't so kind of in your face. It's not sort of, pandering to the masses or whatever. He finds a way to put that comedic spin on it, and therefore everybody can get on board with everything he's saying, whether it's, you know, stuff about unions or if it's just stuff about a man taking a piss on a wall. It's easy to relate to him, I think. I'd say he's a relatable comedian.
Yeah.
Once you can get past the sort of, I don't want to say mumbling, but sure. he has this comedic thing about him where he's very clear for a good few words, and then he affects a kind of mumble on behalf of a character or on behalf of his own narrative.
Yeah.
And I guess it's very nice. You don't always have to hear somebody to understand their joke, is what I'm saying.
That's also true. I mean, he's got there's so much. I mean, again, why he's such a good actor is that he can imbue so much life into every line where you're like, I know where the fuck he's going and I got enough of the context. But for sure, this is dialect. I think a lot of it must be dialect that this audience is on board for, because they're laughing at moments where I'm like, oh, I missed something. But at the very least, I got the most of the picture. Again, yeah. Through the vocal acting.
That's it. And I think that the biggest takeaway I would say from it is that if you're ever feeling sad about the world, which obviously right now that's not the case because everything's very rosy at the minute.
Of course, yeah.
But ordinarily, if times are bad, stick on this record, because I came away from it just feeling warm and happy. And again, I don't know if that's because I felt back among my people, you know, not Scottish people, but British people, right? We are one, right? And so it did it in that sense. But also, there's just something delightful about it, really. It's certainly not punched down comedy, you know.
No,
and I'd say it celebrates, in a way, good times, but without saying it. And definitely without saying it.
Yeah, without following it up with, come on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, you know, you're fine. I'm just gonna take some tea, by the way.
Mm-hmm. That's fine, please do that.
I have in my hand, I have a glass filled with iced tea / coffee. My wife handed this to me 2 minutes before I went on air and said, react to that. Like, I've never had this in my life.
A mix of tea and coffee? Am I understanding correctly what you just said?
I'm afraid it is. And from one Englishman to another, I think in Swindon, you would never do that, would you?
No, not us Swindonians, no.
No.
We're too busy over there looking at the world's oldest roundhouse to do what you're doing, which I think is in Swindon.
That's amazing.
What's weird is I then lived in the place with the world's largest roundhouse when I moved to America. Isn't that weird?
This is unbelievable.
Yeah, this really should have been all about me.
It should have. Swindon's never been knighted because it's a city.
That's exactly right. It's problematic. It's Can I tell you, I did go there as part of my our honeymoon was a trip to England and then Scotland, and there's never been a bigger disappointment.
Yeah, Swindon, actually, it's one of those places that is often, it's often, you know, used in the same way that kind of a Scranton, Pennsylvania would be. As a matter of fact, of course, Scranton, obviously the setting for the American office, Swindon is featured in the British office too.
Yeah, true. That's
Yeah.
a good point.
Yeah.
And Eddie Izzard uses it as an example. He then compares it to Fresno in, I think, Dressed to Kill, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a decent comparison. I think it probably lacks the weather of Fresno,
Sure.
but other than that, I can see it. I can see it. Swindon, I've only been once. It was last year. I don't have anything else to add. That's
Yeah.
my story.
I had
Thank you.
pizza in Swindon. That's what I had in Swindon, pizza.
Did you?
Why would I eat pizza in England, first of
Yeah,
all?
right. That's
There's no curry. That's why. There was nowhere to get curry at the time.
this. Well, where can you find curry? I was saying to my wife yesterday, I wish we had a way of taking British Indian French fries and moving
Oh.
them to America because they're amazing. It's
My God.
Britain's take on them. It's
Yeah.
stupid, but
No, it's
I
good.
think, and I'm going to try to engineer a segue. I
Please.
think Billy Connolly likes French fries. I've heard that
Yeah, I did
somewhere.
too. He calls them chips, so I don't know if you're aware, but the word they use is chips.
That's it. That's it. And that's a beautiful segue into my channel, which deals with this kind of thing. Lost in the Pond, YouTube. Check it out. So I think that one other thing actually that really struck me about this album is that obviously I liked it as a kid, or at least one song from it, but it is actually, it does deal with themes of childhood quite a
Oh,
bit
yeah.
in this
Yeah.
thing. You know, the janitor song, which I thought was really moving, actually, in a weird way. He starts out
Yeah.
hating him, and then feeling sorry for him.
Right.
I
Yeah,
was
there's a
moved.
lot of pathos in what he does, and you don't expect it because he's just loud and brash seeming. You then have to then examine, well, then how does he have the heart to sing these other songs so beautifully and sing? It's a nice comparison that is, I think, probably representative of who he really is, especially since it is funny. I looked at his Wikipedia probably for the first time today, having been obsessed with him for years, and some of the darkness of his childhood made me realize, oh, this is why he's a comedian.
Yeah.
This is why certain parts of his childhood are more fodder for comedy than the other. Like specifically, he even says, talks about shitting his pants and then going home and talking to his mother, which did not happen because his mother abandoned him as a child and his father abused him. So he only had his dad, but in this fantasy land, he goes home to mom, which I was
It's
like, yeah.
true, and of course that then gives rise to some incredible pathos if you know that story when he sings A Coat of Many Colors. Too. When I was listening to it, I just thought, wow, I'm not sure in the same situation I could sing this with the same sense of abandon.
Right.
Abandon is definitely the wrong word to use there,
I know what you mean, though.
given the history. But yes, I think I'd have to revisit it again and also read his extensive Wikipedia page and
Sure.
particularly those portions to get a sense for it. But yes, he did. And it's kind of amazing and a testament to who he is, I think, that he's turned out such a swell guy who looks like a thin Santa Claus, you know, with a Scottish accent. I
Of
think that
course.
that's, you know, in all seriousness, that's what I would take away. And when you know that, and then you listen to the songs, any of them, it just sort of, I don't know, it comes out of the microphone too.
Yeah.
And it's easy to find joy, to share his joy, I think.
This is making me realize I haven't listened to all of my Billy Connolly albums, which makes me feel kind of like a dick because I'm a big fan. People should listen to The Pick of Billy Connolly, if only because that's the first one I ever heard, and it's brilliant. It's
Doesn't that also has Wellies on it? Is that the one you were saying?
absolutely does. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's the one that I heard for sure. It's got that, but it's also got this great song specifically about football violence, which is or song story about football violence, and maybe one of my funniest things I've ever heard, just about two drunk guys who two drunk Scotsmen who then who visit the Vatican, go to a bar nearby, and say, what does a Pope drink? And he says he likes a wee glass of creme de menthe, and they both ask for a pint of that and then wake up half dead. And it's one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. It's a very good story.
Good. I'd like to check more out, you know, having listened to it today, because it's a weird disconnect. It's like with Jerry Seinfeld, right? I've only seen about one or two episodes of Seinfeld. I know that's probably blasphemous too in America.
Not to me, but sure.
Right. But then I started watching Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, and I thought, oh, I kind of like this show. It's an interesting format. And so, you know, I sort of, my avenue to him was more through that latter day show than his, the thing he's most known for. And with Billy Connolly, it's sort of similar in that I got into him, or at least I got into him as a person through sort of BBC interviews and things like that, and just thought, he seems really cool. I'd love him as my, I don't want to say dad, because I love my actual dad, but as a granddad, because I never knew my granddads, right? He would be great as that. And so, yeah, and so making those connections back, I kind of just want to see where he's coming from in terms of his comedy, because this isn't necessarily indicative of it. The get right into him. That's how you say it in Scottish, right? Get right into him, I think. It's a praise. This is the first time in this conversation that I'm whipping this out, because I was a bit scared to do it, right? But then I realized,
but I chose not to.
I think the wife put a bit of tequila in that, so it makes it. I'm going to stop now, just in case there are any Scottish people watching it.
Ooh, also, real quick, you must watch The Imposters if you haven't seen The Imposters. That is, that's his best performance of all time.
Is it?
Holy shit!
It's a stupid movie. I'm getting imposter syndrome sitting on the show talking about Billy Connolly when I don't know anything about him. You know, it's
this
weird.
Kind of thing happens all the time, because people sort of forget that I'm here to talk about their experience with Billy Connolly. I did not sign up for Lawrence Brown, Billy Connolly expert. You know, it's more what do you perceive of him? It's just as valid as anybody else's perception. I mean, I think I knew him from Head of the Class before I knew him from anything. Then my mom gave me this tape, which is inappropriate for me, but it changed my life. So I'm glad you picked Billy Connolly. It's the first comedy I ever heard. And so I'm therefore more interested in you than my other guests. So I appreciate it.
No, that's definitely valid. Definitely valid. And it's good, you know, because I can't really, it's hard to sit down with the other people in my house, those being my wife and the cat, who's not a person, and have this sort of conversation, only because that's not where their interests lie, right? My cat's mostly interested in birds outside and dead salmon inside. That it came in a tin. This is we don't just put dead salmon on the floor, you know. He eats it, and all that. I can't have these kind of conversations. So this is good. This is a sort of, it's an eye opener for me. I think, you know, next month you could have me on to talk about a comedian I've never heard of.
I will take you up on it, because I guarantee you I've got a million you've never heard of sitting right here. Most of which you'll hate. I've got about 700 albums sitting right here.
Oh, right. I thought you meant the people themselves.
Oh, no, them too. They're just no longer with us.
Child comedians.
Yes. Yeah, very tiny child comedians. Yeah, that's funnier than my joke that I murdered a bunch of comedians. That's a better joke. You're right.
No, I disagree. I love dark humor like that. I veer away from it a little bit on my YouTube channel, just because you can get demonetized and things like that. But I think there's a big place for dark humor, right? And I don't know. I love the idea that you've murdered them all, because you have a kind of, I'm assuming that vinyl with my name on it that I see in the background there, I'm assuming you painted that today. And it's
I did. 100%.
Yeah. So you're taking it very seriously. And I love the fact that something with my name on it is being used to disguise and hide corpses.
I'm glad that makes you feel good, because that's what this show is all about, really.
Yeah, I hope you don't try and edit it in such a way that makes me sound complicit in this.
Well, I actually have a list of words I'd now like you to say, please. What I would like to do, will you please tell me, give the audience two sentences as to why to give this album a listen if you recommend it?
Two words, two sentences.
I made a mistake.
That's no, you're fine. I probably misheard it because of the tequila in the tea. Tequila.
Thank
Indeed.
You.
It's a proper Friday album, I'd say. Mm-hmm. It's the end of the week. You just want an extra buzz. I'm not talking about the tequila. I am talking about the album, right? And it just leaves you feeling happy. Mm-hmm. Really happy. You can't come away from it feeling anything other than happy, or you could come away from it bursting for the toilet because you drank water throughout like I did. But that's a very specific scenario.
Also, another quick recommendation for The Pick of Billy Connolly. There's a very dark folk song on that about a young man pushing his grandmother in a wheelchair and she falls off the cliff and so does he, trying to get her. And then so did this person and that person. It is one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life.
It is. It's dark humor. There are two things. If you want me to laugh uncontrollably, dark humor and toilet humor, and I can't, there's nothing I can do. The word poo is still inherently hilarious.
Yeah.
And he has his fair share of poo on this album. Not literally. You know, that he talks about it. Well, he talks about going into the urinals, or is it urinals?
You know, he does do him. He mixes it up. He also, by the way, says shot instead of jab. I noticed.
Does he?
Yes.
I wonder if they do that in Scotland.
That's what I was wondering, because I had forgotten that the word jab was used until, again, I watched one of your videos. I'm like, oh, right, Shaun of the Dead. That's my only experience with the word jab. But, you know, listen.
Yeah.
You get your experiences where you get them.
You do. I'm surprised he did that. I'd have to look into that one. Mm-hmm. But his bits on the urinals, they're amazing to me. I find the best observations and the things in life, aside from kind of, you know, poverty, war, and just injustice in general, the things that annoy me most, the little things that annoy me most, usually happen in a public loo. It's things like, in fact, he alludes to it himself, but in a different sketch, where people, like men particularly, I don't know about women, but like men like to go into public loos and go, you know, like hop on back and just thinking, I'm sitting next to you, mate. Yeah. You know, what are you doing? And then like spits it out really hard into his little porcelain god. And it's unbelievable. It's things like that. People and whistling. The best thing though is when you go into a public loo. Doesn't matter which country. This is entirely universal.
Is it what, right? I think it is. Is it this? Is it this? Or is it something else?
It's tied to that. It can involve that. It's when they think they're alone, the other person, and they start mumbling to themselves. Or they might be on the phone, but it's better when they're mumbling to themselves because they think they're alone and they start. I've heard somebody say something like, he's looking in the mirror and he says, oh yeah, you look good today. Yeah. Right? I always, always take that opportunity to flush the loo at that moment. And I never see his reaction, but I always imagine it. And it feels like a victory for the day.
Of course it does.
Yeah.
Lawrence, this has been a delight.
Likewise.
I really appreciate you doing the show. Why don't you? Oh my God! I can look up when this is going to come out. I don't know if you got anything specific coming up, but why don't you tell people where they can find you first, and then I'll
get
an idea when it's coming up.
I usually don't give the URL because it's YouTube/ and a bunch of words. Although I could do that. It's youtube.com/C/ Lost in the Pond. See, it's a bit of a mouthful. Just go to YouTube and type in Lost in the Pond, right? As in the Atlantic Ocean, right?
Sure.
And you'll find me there, I think. I know you will, in fact.
Yes.
And that's it. And I try to get videos out very frequently. At the minute, it's tough because I've got all these boxes, but I promise you, you'll have a good time. And if you don't have a good time, I also promise not to do anything about that. I can't.
You can't control that.
It's not a contractual agreement between us.
You're only responsible for you, Lawrence.
Absolutely. that's all I have on that. I should probably big myself up more.
Patreon.com/lostinthepond.
Definitely. If you want to support my channel, go to that very URL.
Do that
you
first.
Do that. Yeah, definitely. And you can support us there. And, you know, it really does help. I know people say that, but it genuinely does help build the channel and build my ego.
Of course. You need that. You're English. It's not your fault. Again.
It's true.
You do with what you're given. It's not your fault.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And, you know, most of the time you'll see me, you know, I pronounce words without opening my mouth too much because I have British teeth. Mm-hmm. And I am conscious of what your viewers, my viewers, right? I'm conscious of what they might see, and they might click. They might say, "No, never again. This aesthetically does not. I'm not attuned to this. I don't know what that. It's Friday. I've had tequila.
That's fine. That's very fine. And in a Chicago cup, I might add, which is a very nice. I really wish that when I lived in Chicago for 2 years, that I had had that kind of like. Support the city attitude. I wish I need to get a Chicago cup. It's a very nice cup. It's handsome.
I should say my landlady has bought me this. So
are you kidding me? That's delightful.
It is delightful.
It's
a
good cup.
It is. It's a very nice glass, and we love it very much. And I've had half of this already. Unbelievable.
Does it taste good though?
It didn't at first.
Okay.
Because I'm being British. I'm supposed to hate iced tea. But she conned me by putting tequila in it, right? And if you do that, a few brain cells will die, probably the ones that I use for discernment.
Sure.
And I'll say, yes, it was the greatest drink you've ever given me. Thank you.
I already said this, but I appreciate you doing the show. This was fun. I don't think I, you know what? Yes. Everybody go check out the Professional Blur, which is my podcast about extra work, background acting, which I think the new season might come out around the time this episode does. If not, check out season one. It's worth listening to. Talk to people about getting left behind on Jim Carrey movies and almost dying and other ones. So it's a lot of fun. Thank you guys for listening. And as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. You can email us at podcast@comedyonvinyl.com. You can also send snail mail to Stolen Dress Entertainment, P.O. Box 805, Burbank, California, 91503. Subscribe to Comedy on Vinyl on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you can find podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and write us a review. It helps. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Comedy on Vinyl, or find everything in one place at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune in to the new Stand Up Records channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast. Visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, watch videos, and imbibe freely of our multimedia content going back 15 plus years. Dress Entertainment.
Hey, it's my turn. Ah!